Welcome to another edition of the Gaming Gang Extra, Volcon Raw, featuring Crash Games, recorded live from the convention floor. This time I'm joined by Michael Coe and Patrick Nickel as we discuss their games Rise, Legend of the Lost Dutchman, Lords, Ladies, and Lizards, along with a whole lot more. I'm your host, Jeff McAleer. Hi again. In this, the last of the Volcon Raw coverage, I had the pleasure to sit down with Michael Coe and Patrick Nickel from local game publisher Crash Games, and we get to discuss their successful Kickstarter project, Rise, as well as other games they're currently developing. I'm currently with Michael Coe and Patrick Nickel, both from Crash Games here at Volcon. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you doing, Jeff?
Having a real good day. It's a lot of fun being out here.
So far, so good. I understand you have a few different titles that are on the horizon. One is hitting, I believe, in April. It was successfully kick-funded, and that would be Rise. We did make mention of it in a gaming news piece on the Gaming Gang. I'm not real familiar with the game. I'm looking at the box and components, or what should probably be the components right now. Tell our listeners a little bit about Rise.
Well, it's a two-player abstract strategy game. Give you a little teaser here. We are looking at multiplayer variants of 3 to 4 players, maybe 5, 6 in the future, so certainly stay tuned for that. But it's a real scrupulous game. It's real meticulous about how you place your workers and being real careful about making sure that you are forming the right kind of formation and optimizing your moves to try to get the most out of the workers. It's a game where each person is trying to build towers. The first person who can build 3 towers with their workers wins. Now you have a hexagon board that's a modular board, so every game is different. Every single time you're placing down your land and you're building your territory, and you never know how it's going to come out, but it's up to you, and you try to do it in the best way to surmount your opponent. It's a pretty quick game, plays about 20 to 30 minutes, unless of course you get 2 people in there that are real tacticians, then it can get a little bit longer, but for the most part it plays really nice, and it's real simple to learn how to play. But once you kind of get the hang of the strategy, it's kind of opens up a real depth that you never expected, and the game can go so many ways, and you can cut the strategy so many different ways, and it's real surprising. It actually, the box is kind of small, but it really packs a big punch.
And just from looking at the components, I haven't looked at the rules or anything like that at this point, it almost would look like it's a children's game or family game, but from your description, Michael, it doesn't sound like that's the case.
You know, I've actually seen a 7-year-old beat her dad, who is a computer programmer, and it was quite a thrill to watch, and she just loved it to death, and she caught on real quick. And that's the nice thing about it, is the rules are very simple. There's not a lot to the rules, and it's pretty intuitive. So once you've got the hang of just a few basic moves, then you can really run with it, and it turns into a lot more than you'd expect. And it's not real text dependent, and so I mean, it can be done in any language and done to any level and any age. And whether you're an intro gamer or whether you're an avid chess player or just somebody who loves strategy in general, it has a certain level of appeal to each of those different markets, and that's what's really neat. And it's kind of taken on a life of its own. And despite the fact that it's an abstract strategy, people tend to put a theme to it. They tend to see something different. Everybody kind of sees something different, whether they see workers or soldiers, or whether they're killing each other's opponents to build castles, or whether they're just simply eliminating.
Now you're scaring me, you know.
Well, yeah, we're not putting the bones into the mortar or anything, you know, by that means. But like Michael was saying, it was at BGGCon last year that we really discovered what a hit we had with a themeless theme. Mm-hmm. You know, a horrible way to describe it, but, you know, on the drive out to BGGCon, Michael and I had a very serious conversation about, does this game need a theme? And we really, I felt it did, he felt it didn't, and we weren't, absolutely neither one of us was willing to slap a theme on.
Right.
Or compromise the quality. At BGGCon, we sat down to play it with a, you know, a real dapper gentleman. He's like, this is a great puzzle game. And the mom that we played it with, she's like, this would be a great game to introduce strategy to my kids. The Cthulhu freak, Chris Kirk.
Hey, wait a second. Don't call us freaks.
Oh, the Cthulhu people are freaks.
Hey, guys, so. Thanks for joining me today. And Elliot is going to refuse to listen to this because he is Mr. Lovecraft.
There, it is a very well-loved theme. And so somebody actually, I think it was Chris Kirkman with Dice Hate Me Games, was saying, oh, and I see these as, you know, cultists building the towers to allow Cthulhu into the world. And all of those people were right. It was those themed to them. or was that theme to them, rather. So we were able to see that people were put their own theme on it, and that led us to create the faction sticker pack for the game, and that was something we allowed anybody that was involved in the project to vote on through a survey, and we took the top six factions and we made them into stickers that can be placed onto the disc. So it's something that's purely optional for people. If you want to fight ninjas versus pirates or wizards versus knights, any combination is there. And like Michael mentioned earlier, we have just found that Rise has such a wide audience. It scales for extremely young players, old players alike. It scales to just about any skill level as far as, you know, being able to play a game. The strategy is up to the individual player.
I think it's interesting, Patrick, that you had mentioned that you had thought the game needed a theme. Michael, you thought it did not need a theme. And as someone who reviews games, and Elliot would attest this as well, there's nothing more frustrating for us sometimes to see a game that has a tacked on theme. What was the point of doing that? I don't feel like I'm fighting anything in space as opposed to being on Earth or underwater, or this could be little fairies going at it. It doesn't matter. I find it interesting that you went that route, Michael, and just said, sorry, Patrick, you're out of luck.
Michael and I have a process as co-founders of Crash Games and co-designers. His last name's Co, so it all is very ironic from the get-go here. But one thing that we are absolutely steadfast and dead committed to is we will never, ever put a product out there that's simply out there to be out there. I'm not going to paste a theme on a game. I'm not going to rush a game to market if it's not working the way that I want it to. There's been a lot of contention and a lot of controversy about small publishers rushing games to market on Kickstarter so that they can compete with the bigger companies. You know what? This is my full-time job. I don't have to design in the night times. I don't have to design in the weekends. I'm very lucky and fortunate enough to have a situation where this is my everyday, all-day job. So Michael works a full-time job on top of it. So we're able to develop games at a much faster speed than normal. But we will never, ever put a game out there with a tacked-on theme or with mechanics that are clunky and not working. And so, you know, that was part of our process with Rise. And Michael brought me over to his side, and I saw the people that are going to want a theme are going to inject it into the game themselves. And the stickers allow them to do that. Otherwise, it is a very tactical, tug-of-war strategy game. And that's going to fit a niche crowd within a niche crowd. The stickers are going to bring some more lighter gamers into that circle.
Did the Cthulhu mythos make the cut for the stickers?
Cthulhu was very close.
Yeah, well, it did not. It started pretty close, and then it started falling back. And out of, I believe, what, 25 to 30 different factions that we had, Cthulhu ended up landing somewhere in the 20s.
And must have been an elder sign on the button somewhere.
We've covered Rise. You have another project that is going to be hitting Kickstarter soon, as far as I understand. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Well, and just to wrap up really quickly about Rise, Rise is currently in production. We should be getting our raw production copy here any day. Once we sign off on that first, you know, 12 copies for us to approve the final, we'll be here. We really hope for that to be hitting in July. There's a small, very small, minuscule, I'm even hesitant to mention it, chance that we may have it at Origins, like a 5% or less chance. Most likely have it at Gen Con.
Okay.
Cool thing is we will have Giant Rise at Gen Con as well. So want everybody to know kind of where Rise stands before we move on. Our current project that is in playtesting and near the tail end of its development is Legend of the Lost Dutchman. And Legend of the Lost Dutchman is a light strategy family game for 2 to 5 players in which they are exploring and uncovering and mining in the Superstition Mountains looking for the Lost Dutchman's gold.
Wow, that sounds really familiar from being out here in the Valley of the Sun.
It's a local legend, and it's actually been done a couple times. We came across those games in our research, and we just felt like those games did not execute the mechanics. It did not embody and capture how rich and how interesting the theme was. And so, you know, we chose to go ahead and go forward with it because we really feel that we're giving it a nice, fun family approach and a game that I certainly want to play. And that's really behind everything that we make. If we don't want to play it, we don't want to publish it.
Sure.
I definitely back that up. And it's kind of funny because here we are all set up here at Volcon playing our games, and I'm sitting at the Rise table, and Patrick's over there sitting at Legend of the Lost Dutchman table, and I'm watching him play the game with other people, and I'm jealous because I want to be over there playing it because it's a lot of fun. It really is, and I'm not just saying that. I'm sitting over there watching them play it and watching them enjoy it, and I'm just like, oh, I kind of wish I was over there playing that game. I really enjoy it. It's just, it's exciting. What's nice about it is because it's a light game, it's very approachable, and you're able to just kind of let go and enjoy both strategic elements as well as random elements, and having them kind of have a marriage together and kind of seeing how it comes out, and it makes it pretty fun and exciting. You never know what's going to happen next, and I like that a lot. I'm so excited about it. We've actually spent a lot of time up in Goldfield and Lost Dutchman State Park, and we've been doing a lot of research on it. We're trying to keep it real nice and true to the actual story and to the legend, and I mean, even our map. You could literally take our map and head up into the Superstitions, and the trails are correct. They're the actual trails with the actual names, and for the most part, they're the
gold is not where it shows on the map.
Right.
You need to, you know, jump in there and make sure that's there. I would like to head up there and see, just by chance, maybe the mine's where we say it is.
Bring plenty of water. Yeah. At least do that.
Lots of water. And the thing that I want people to know the most about Legend of the Lost Dutchman, people hear light strategy and they think a myriad of things. Most of them think, oh, this is dumbed down. Oh, this is, you know, simple and I'm not going to enjoy it. That's not the case with Legend of the Lost Dutchman. I wanted it to be light strategy, but I wanted to have meaningful decisions in it as well. When you're moving on the board that's comprised of cards that you flip over, so it's a modular board, there's some meaning behind your movement choices. There's different strategies. You have to have your skills at a level where you can defeat various animals and various perils, and there is a slew of meaningful choice. So while it's light and it's not going to hurt your noggin, you know, it's not going to take you 7 hours to play this, not going to make you feel like you just pulled a shift at your job when you're done.
I happen to enjoy big epic games, so I'm old school. I'm an old guy. I left my walker in the car.
I thought I saw tennis balls on this microphone. I was wondering where those came from. And I like a good brain burner. Some of my favorite games, Princes of Florence, Puerto Rico, some of them can be brain burners, but we really wanted to make sure that this was approachable, but that meaningful choice wasn't removed from the game. And that's not an easy marriage.
On a historical note, talking about the Lost Dutchman mine, there have been a few millionaires who have spent probably more money trying to find that than the treasure would actually be worth. So I find that kind of interesting. And even to this day, with the modern technology we have, nobody knows if it's there or not.
One of the things that Michael and I find so interesting is that legend is so powerful. I know story to be the most powerful medium of our time, and that story is so rich. Everybody wants to, you know, no pun intended, everybody wants to find that treasure. It's over 100 years old. It may not even be there, but the potential that it is has people so fascinated. We wouldn't know anything about the Legend of the Lost Dutchman were it not for Adolf Ruth, the 66-year-old man who was pretty much the first guy to go after that treasure. And that just speaks volumes about the power that this legend holds. It's captivated Michael and I, and that's why the game has been so much fun to develop and to play.
The legend's larger than life, and that's really what's exciting is that. And that's why, you know, you mentioned millionaires going out there and maybe they're spending more money than what it's even worth. And that, you know, they don't need the money. Apparently, if they're millionaires, they have no reason for the money.
It's
but
the
they want to be part of history. They want to get that unobtainable, and that's really great. It's really a neat legend.
It's like finding the Titanic. Nobody ever thought it would be done, but it was.
Yep. Somebody had to be the first person to do it, and I think that's what it offers up, the chance to be exceptional. And I really, really believe that to a far lesser degree that you have that with our game. You have a chance. You know, there's a dual win condition in our game. You can either be the player that's acquired the most treasure before the water supply has run out and the extraction team has to rescue the prospectors, or through a very strategic choice on our communal treasure map, you can be the player that actually finds the mine. That is fairly difficult to do and impressive. And if you do it, you deserve the kudos that go along with it.
When do you feel that that should be hitting Kickstarter?
We're aiming right now for a late April launch, sometime around April the 22nd.
That's where April got stuck in my head. I was thinking that's when Rise was coming out.
Yeah, that's where the April thing came from. We'd love to have Rise in April. That would make our lives a ton easier. But we're aiming for that. You know, people should stay tuned to our site, crashgamesaz.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @crash_games and facebook.com/crashgames. We'll keep people in the loop on the launch date because it has to be playing the way that we want it to before we feel confident in publishing it. It's almost there, but we want to make it better. You know, I had a high school teacher that had a mantra of good, better, best. I won't rest until my good is better than my best. And I really adopt that. I know Michael does too with our publishing. I don't want to publish a good game. I want to publish the best game possible.
Sure. Yeah.
There, I believe, is a third title that's in a bit of development right now.
Yeah, Jeff, you had mentioned that you're kind of an old classic gamer that loves that epic gaming experience, and that is exactly what we have in Lords, Ladies, and Lizards. It's a fantasy adventure game where you're kind of taking a pen and paper role-playing game and mixing it with a classic-style board game where players get to create characters, customize their characters with different stats and different bonuses. They get to itemize treasure to their characters and equip things and kind of mix and match while they're developing their character and gaining levels, all while going through this great world where it's based on a timeline and you're starting at winter solstice and making it past summer and back around to winter, and you just get to go on this grand adventure. All sorts of neat elements come out through the game, group activities, even some silly things that get you up out of your chair trying to imitate a minotaur or a dragon, and everybody's trying to guess what you're doing. And it's neat. It gets everybody involved. Some parts are silly, some parts are serious, and some parts are intense. There's a bit of a auction, kind of a bidding game going on where the king is expecting something from you, and everybody's got to place a silent bid to the king, and no matter what you put, you're going to lose. But it's,
I always lose.
Yeah, it just depends on who loses more, you know. But there's a whole bunch that gets brought out in this game, and it's a real true adventure game. A good long couple of hours of play time, but you won't even know that time went by. You'll just be having a riot the whole time through, and all the while you're trying to take on this dragon who's chasing you around the game, kicking your butt the whole time along, and eventually when you get powerful enough to finally pay that favor back, the reward is amazing, and you're like, oh man, I finally got the dragon that I had lost 20 times to, and it's a great experience, and it gets everybody up out of their chair, and it's definitely looking forward to Lords, Ladies, and Lizards. And again, more information of that is on our website at crashgamesaz.com, so check that out.
Man, you guys keep throwing that domain name out there. It's almost like an advertisement here.
We don't want people to get confused. We couldn't get the domain that we wanted, and it's so unfortunate. It's a site that's not used, registered out of the Grand Cayman Islands for a dumping ground. And so want people to know you got to add the AZ for Arizona after Crash Games. We've worked really hard on our website. It's a, you know, Gaming Gang, great website of your own. We've, you know, really taken great lengths and efforts to make sure that our website is interactive. You're not bombarded with flash video, you know, or a bunch of, you know, clunkiness. We've worked really hard. Travis with Bad Industries has been monumental in us getting that phenomenal looking website up.
Moving back to Lords, Ladies, and Lizards, Michael, I do notice that you've got minis in the game because I'm taking a peek at greens right in front of me.
Oh, I wish I could show those greens to all of our listeners right now. As a matter of fact, I will probably get a picture of them up on the website. So yet again, another shameless plug, but I won't say
it. It's okay. I'll be taking photos too, so people can stay on my website and take a look at things.
Cease and desist.
Listen to this.
Hey, either way, we're
just... Yeah, this is going to be edited down to about 40 seconds. Hey, this is Jeff. I'm with Michael. And... Yep. Hey, thanks for joining us. All right, and the people will be like, well, what do they make?
I'm really excited to show them off. The artist that did the miniatures is Alex Garrett. He's also done some stuff for Clever Mojo Games, including Alien Frontiers Factions. And he's actually been a name that I've kind of been tossing around a little bit when people come up and see the greens, and they're like, oh, wow, you know, and they get all into it, and I say Alex Garrett, and they're like, oh, I know Alex Garrett, and it's kind of unique. He's from Canada, and he seems to have a lot more exposure than what I had even guessed. I just randomly came across him. I ended up contacting about 5 different artists looking for somebody to do the sculptures last year, and he was the only one that got back to me. And you know what? He was the right one, because they're amazing. They're awesome. It's a total of 8 miniatures, including a tower. So you got 2 lords, 2 ladies, 2 lizards, and then the dragon. Dragon's kind of got a unique personality, and he's a real fun one to look at. But in the game, there's a combat system that's based on several different types of actions, physical actions, spell-based actions, and tactical-based actions. And so the way that the miniatures were done were lore, each representation of the Lord, the Lady, the Lizard have a spell character and a physical character. So for the Lords, you've got a great wizard and a warrior, a knight, and then for the ladies, you have a cleric and an Amazon. For the Lizards, you're looking at a shaman and a barbarian. So you get a nice little touch to each one of them that kind of hits close to home to certain gamers, and anyone that you can relate to, you pick up and want to play with that character. And a real great attention to detail. So certainly check out the website and look for those miniatures. It's going to be great. There's a whole bunch of fun elements that come into this game, and I'm just chomping at the bit to expose more of this game to you. But it's not going to be a project we're getting out right away. It's going to be at the end of the year. Around August, we have some things that we want to work on. And like Patrick was mentioning earlier, we're in this business to build memories, to build experiences, and to just express this creative monster that's within both Patrick and I, and we just want to bring it to the gamers and just provide them an amazing experience of all different genres, of all different levels. And Lords, Ladies, and Lizards is definitely going to be a huge, huge game, so certainly look for that one, but it's a grand adventure in the making. We just love games. We're both lifelong gamers, and we're just making games that we want to play that the market doesn't quite have yet. We want to be the ones that bring it to the market, and it's just an exciting experience.
Anything else, gentlemen, that you have floating further down the pipe that you're bouncing around that you'd want to share?
There's some project I wish that I could share with you. It's an idea that Michael Coe came up with, and our process is so organic and natural. We just come up with ideas. Some of them are shelved. Some of them we come back to. Some of them are instant gold in our mind as far as ideas. And Michael cooked one up recently, and I don't think I've ever been as excited about a project that we have done yet. It's the project out of all, you know, the three that we currently have. And don't get me wrong, I'm excited about those. But the idea he has, I'm like, that has not been done anywhere. That is a fantastic idea, fantastic theme. I love the mechanics that he's proposed. And let me just tease that it's Western.
I'll add a little bit. I was gonna throw in a little teaser myself without giving too much away. And let me just say this: I'm your Huckleberry.
That's a good hint.
Yeah, but Dick. I already have a game like that in development on Kickstarter next week.
We'll go ahead and we will join you at the dollar pledge level.
Sweet.
We just want your updates.
Hey, I was gonna say actually my funding goal is $3, so it really doesn't matter. Hey,
you're only a dollar away. Time to hit your mom up.
Obviously, I know my Western history, so I pretty much know where you're going with that, but we'll let everybody else figure that out. Gentlemen, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about Crash Games?
I think Michael summed it up. We're lifelong gamers. Of course, we would like to turn this into a way to support our families, but we are primarily driven by passion. You know, this is something that, you know, I've wanted to do for quite a bit of time. Michael and I both have certainly had great, great opportunities elsewhere. This is where we want to be. And I am committed to this lifetime for providing people with phenomenal quality games, both in production quality and in gameplay.
Absolutely. And Crash Games is a designation for a group of rhinos, and there's plenty of room for more rhinos. So join our Crash, hop onto our website. Join our newsletter, stay in touch of what we have going on and what we have to offer. We'd love to see you at conventions. We always mention where we're going to be. So, yeah, just stay tuned, and we're excited to just share all of our creative energy with you guys and just get your feedback and play games. Long live the gamer.
Yep.
Patrick, Michael, thank you very much for taking time out from Volcon to talk with me today. And for our listeners out there, definitely head over to CrashGamesAZ.com. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you very
much, Jeff.
There you have it. A big thanks to Michael Coe and Patrick Nickel for spending time chatting about their games on the horizon at Crash Games, as well as their own company philosophy. Keep your ears tuned for more in-depth interviews on future extras, and don't forget to catch Elliot and I on the next edition of The Gaming Gang.